You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Seitz.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Seitz. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is live call-in radio. If you've been on the air here for a little bit, you know that Tom's is live call-in radio, and we pick up where he left off, except we change subjects.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I don't have a car with 600,000 miles on it. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's something else, I bet.
Yeah, but you and I are both... You changed my perspective when you told me how many miles you had on your last car that before it got totaled.
I do tend to keep them. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, so I had to change my minimum mileage achievement before I would consider replacing the car.
Right, right.
So I bumped it up to 300.
There you go.
And I'm working on it. But after listening to that guy with 600, I think, man, that's a real challenge.
that's a long haul there, yeah.
That was a bad pun.
Somebody's got to do it, right?
Well, this is live call-in radio. I got to interrupt us here somewhere. And you want to do that, it's 888-312-5757. 888-312-5757 will get you to Mike in the control room, where he is in control of everything except the conversation on this show. But he will put you in the queue. Let us know that you are waiting to ask a question about your portfolio, stock market, interest rates, things we are going to cover here today. 888-312-5757. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that on April 3rd is our next stock market update webinar. And if you have not registered, you can do so. Go to IRIRadio.com. IRIRadio.com. Lower left-hand corner, a couple of clicks, your email, you will be set. You get a link to join us, and if you can't join us, you will get a replay link to watch it when there's nothing on your DVR that excites you. I mean, we have that. We go through, you know, we got things recorded, punch, punch, punch. You know, seen that one. And maybe one of these days I can convince my wife to watch one of our webinars,
sure,
instead of the TV show.
There you go.
Give it a try. Anyway, you'd want to talk to us again, 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. I was listening to the news as we were getting ready to go to air here, and the good news that TSA checkpoints have recorded a 14 days, a new number, a positive number. And yes, they have. However, we are still more than 50% below where we were before all this lockdown stuff started.
Sure.
And we're going to get to the lockdown stuff here in a little bit. But let's talk about what is one of the current concerns in the market. And that is inflation rising.
Inflation. Back a bit here.
It is raising its head when, for the most part, as much as the Fed has been trying to resurrect it for the, well, since 08. 2009 market collapse, and they have been unable to do so, but it is showing up. Food inflation, which is considered by the Fed, supposedly a reliable source of information, that food inflation is the best predictor of future inflation, and it is already at 3.6%. In fact, Linda and I went grocery shopping last night in Tacoma on our way out to dinner, and as when we got home and were putting the groceries away, I had a cooler in the back of the car for him. And she said, man, that's expensive down there. Part of that, you pick your store. It wasn't Walmart for groceries. Inflation, back to the subject here. The Institute for Supply Management, which keeps track of prices that are actually paid, not expected, actually paid by manufacturers, they have spiked to the highest level since 2008. Plastic is hitting record highs. And I track lumber every day.
Right.
And we've talked about it. Lumber prices are at an all-time high, though they show a little sign of topping here, because as interest rates rise, the ability to afford a mortgage decreases, and that makes it harder to sell properties. So that's, we got two factors affecting the housing market going forward. Copper You know, kind of like the stuff they use to put electricity through your house, that kind of copper.
Dr. Copper, you bet.
Yeah, that is up 47% since August. So you have lumber at an all-time high, copper. How about copper pipes? That's what your water runs through. Both of those are input costs, and copper's up almost, well, I don't know if it's the same as lumber. I have to go back and look at the numbers. Gasoline, however, yeah, whoever uses gasoline. Got all these e-cars being pushed on us. Gasoline's up 70% since August. And as a result, bond investors hate inflation.
Indeed.
So rates are spiking. Oh, yes. And there's the key rates, the 10-year treasury. But there are others. I mean, the government needs to borrow money all the time because they spend more than they take in taxes. And they want to raise taxes, but they're not going to use it to pay the bill. They're just going to use it to increase their spending. Mm. I mean, fiscal responsibility does not exist in government.
Nope, not even a little bit. And they're never going to curtail spending. It's just not part of what anyone looks at in Washington, D.C. anymore.
But the interest rates are a critical part of whether or not the stock market can continue to find its way into new highs. And while it's not the rate as much, but when you look at the difference between the shorter and the longer term or the midterm, that's called the basically that's the spread between the different rates of return. And you can think of these as bonds of one duration, one maturity, and another as the funding requirements for the government over various periods of time. And it's this differential between the two, particularly between the 2-year and the 10-year, that's pretty critical for financial modeling. And effectively, there's two types of forecast or spiking in this spread, one of which is a bear market spike and one of which is a bull market spike, which means the spread is rising in both cases. But the bear market indicator is that it's being driven by inflation. That's not good for stocks. The bull market is we have a growing economy and companies are starting to make a lot of money and we're reaching full employment. Interest rates would be expected to go up because of demand. If you are growing the economy, businesses want to borrow more money. I mean, they want to build additional facilities. They want to expand. They want to put something in another state. And they borrow money to do that. All of that's productive use of money. That's good. But when we're just creating shortages and the government just says, yeah, let's borrow some more money. Let's see what we can waste it on this year. That's not good. And that is where we are standing today. So we have concerns about continuing health of the certainly the bond market. And it's simply being pushed up by factors that are not generally good indicators of the probability of hitting new highs in the markets. One of those indicators, which is really messed up, is gold.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. If you have inflation, what is the first thing that most people think about as their defensive strategy or their defensive asset? It's that yellow metal.
If you're a gold bug, that's it. That's your inflation hedge. That's going to keep you ahead of an economy where inflation becomes a problem. You know, the gold bugs will tell you, well, just own gold, and that'll solve your problem.
In fact, this week I had a call from a wholesaler. So that's a company representative whose job is to find, in this case, advisors who don't have gold in their portfolio and give a sales pitch on why gold should be there.
Everybody should have it, right?
That's right. I never go anywhere without your gold. But he didn't get very far with me. part of it we were talking about, I said, well, but it's going down. But over you know, over 40 years, gold's a winner. And, you know, that sounds an awful lot like, I talked about it the last couple of weeks on TV. And I can see his face, but I forget his name. Economist who says when the market was falling over the last couple of weeks, he said, just don't worry about it. Put your money in the market. Put your money in the market because in 40, 50 years, you're going to be set for retirement. Now, frankly, he's old enough. He's not going to be alive in 50 years.
That was Kudlow. Yeah, Kudlow.
Kudlow. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, this wholesaler basically said the same thing about gold. Don't worry about it. You know, everybody should have gold. In 40 years, you're going to be set. I said, well, then I told him how old I was.
I'm not sure I have 40 years to wait
that's
for that
right.
to be okay. It doesn't seem like that's going to work out for me.
But it does take, you know, it does cause you to think, just let's put this in perspective. So let's go back, how about 40 years?
Yeah.
1980s, 40 years ago, gold was 800 bucks. And the stock market, the Dow, was 800 bucks. Just a matter of coincidence.
There you go.
Today, gold is $1,700 an ounce. So it's better than doubled. But the Dow, instead of being 800, is 32,000. So all the money you have tied up in gold is basically a drag on your financial security. Unless, of course, maybe we get into a real depression, in which case, I don't know if anybody's going to want your gold. You know, they're going to want food and water.
gold is a real story. And you know, historically, that's been a store of wealth. But now, today, in a modern economy, it's very difficult to justify gold as being an enormous piece of what it is that your personal economy is. Because, like you just said, Don, even if we do get into a situation where, you know, we have a monetary collapse, you may not be able to spend the gold anyway. So I'm not sure you're getting ahead that way.
So part of the game in this business is, where's your starting point? What are you going to look at for your starting? I don't like that return. Let's try a different year. And so over the last 20 years, instead of 40, gold's a winner. It's up over 340%. And stocks are only up 208 with dividends. Mm. So we changed the starting point, and the argument suddenly goes from loser to winner. So while I'm prepped early for the show today, I go look at some of my standard charts. Gold versus silver over the last year. Silver wins. Gold versus the S&P 500. The S&P wins. Gold versus technology. The QQQ, the Qs win. So, well, let's take a look at silver. Silver versus the market. Well, since August, it's been the market. So one is, somebody's got to pay attention. If you've been one of our webinars, you know that one of our closing challenges is, this is dynamic situation that you're investing in. And simply parking your money and assuming it's going to work out in the long run is dangerous to your financial health. Somebody has to pay attention. You can do it. It is not rocket science. But if you're not going to do it, you need somebody to do so. And a standard pie chart is a buy and hold of a whole bunch of different things on the assumption that when you need money, something in your portfolio will be working. Maybe.
And that's not the kind of thing you want to hang your hat on for the long term. Things change too quickly, and they change too dramatically to say, well, long-term averages are going to save me here, unless you really do have 50 years just to wait. And we don't know those people, and most people don't have that kind of time frame. And speaking of time, it's time for us to get out of here. We got our little late for a break here this morning. We'd like to remind you again, if you haven't been to one of our webinars, we have another one coming up. We do them close to the first Saturday each month. So April 3rd at 9:15, right after the show, we're going to have another stock market update. where we go through what's going on in the economy, what's going on in the markets, kind of a little update on what we're doing with client money. And then we always have plenty of time for your questions to get your questions answered about the economy or markets or specific securities. You can send us a ticker. We'd be happy to show you the charts of what we're thinking about things, get a second opinion. It's a good time for that. If you'd like to register for those, you go to IRIradio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. Head to the webinar page and just click the registration link. You'll get an email back. And on April 3rd, you just click that after the show, and you'll be live online with us. And we will deliver the webinar and get your questions answered. So it's a really good time to get a second opinion on anything you're wondering about. Again, that's IRIRadio.com. This morning, if you'd like to talk to us, we'd love to take your questions on anything investing, 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Well, we need Inspector Clouseau to help figure out what on earth is going on in the market over the last 6 weeks. The technology area has gone through a major change. At, from the high to low, it's actually down almost 12%, a little bit of a rally the last 2 weeks, but it's still off almost 8% from its high. So what is, I've had some emails, what on earth is driving this? Don't people like technology anymore? Well, it depends upon which part of tech and what are the alternatives if we're not going to be there, and why on earth wouldn't we be there in the current environment? And Perry, you and I were talking about this earlier in the week.
Sure.
You found some interesting commentary on perhaps what may be some motivation.
Part of what's going on, sure. And especially the large cap tech, which has been one of the primary drivers of the broad market increase, has really taken a hit, and everybody's wondering, well, what's going on? You know, is Amazon selling less stuff? You know, is Microsoft not moving as much product? Is the cloud services, you know, going down? Why the big realignment? And primarily, the one of the primary concerns anyway is the new tax situation that's coming up in the tech sector. A couple of the drivers for the reasons that people are investing there is they've been a great driver. That's where big returns have come from. But also, after you get those big returns, you had an advantageous capital gains tax situation. So you were going to also get a great tax rate. Chances of outsized returns plus a good tax rate. Guess what? You attract capital. Money goes in, prices go up, share value increases. Now, the new administration says, well, we're going to change that. We're going to raise taxes. We're going to raise taxes. And so people are immediately looking at, well, if that's going to happen, if I have a large capital gain that I'm sitting on, I'm going to get rid of that before the tax rate goes up. Also, you're going to attract less capital if that's not as tax advantaged as it used to be. So that was kind of the primary subsidy stream going into the tech industry, and it's being altered. There seems to be no doubt capital gains taxes are going up. And in government, you know, the rule is if you want less of something to happen, well, tax it. You know, you're going to decrease the amount of money going in there. And if that's capital gains taxes, then you're going to have a decrease in the amount of money people are investing. And that's already showing itself in the market. It manifested itself almost immediately, both with people trying to get out with the capital gains that they have now at the current tax rate, and they're attracting less capital because now it's going to be more expensive to use that line to make money in. So it may be realigning, and maybe it may go somewhere else. You know, who knows where that ends up? All we know is that it's changing what's going on right now.
So the Democrat policymakers apparently have never had a class in behavioral finance. They assume they can raise taxes, and people say, oh, that's okay with me. That's just the new
I'll just
scenario.
Pay more, yeah.
Yeah, I'll pay more. That's all right. The government has better use of my money than I do. I'm really confused about how to use my money. So yeah. It's better to turn it over to the IRS and let Congress figure out what's the highest and best use of, that's a dumb argument, because people make changes in their lives based on cost. It doesn't matter whether it's big or little cost. People react to change, trying to maintain as much of their own money. Oh, that's the problem. It's not our money,
is
it?
It's not ours. And when you change that equation, people change their behavior, and the tax streams never live up to the potential that they think they're going to get out of it, because when they raise taxes, people change the behavior. They're not going to just continue doing the same things blindly and sending more money to Washington, D.C. That never happens, and seems like they never understand that.
So what have we done this last year? As we've dealt with the pandemic, for government again here, looking out for us, they always assure us that, you know, this is in your best interest. We know what to do, unless, of course, they don't. So then they experiment.
Let's give this a shot.
And that's basically what we have done this past year around the world, have had different types of experiments. There's been some coordination, so there is similarity. But unemployment now is down 60% from the pandemic, pre-pandemic high. And we're trying to get some people back to work, and it depends upon which state, or in some cases, which country you happen to be in. But we are going to be struggling for a long time simply because there's not enough money to pay all the businesses that have shut down to reopen. We are going to support, we being the government via you and us taxpayers, we are going to provide money for the companies that manage to make it. The ones who are gone, they aren't even going to get a bereavement card from Uncle Sam.
And there's a whole lot of them that aren't going to reopen. And, you know, we haven't seen the full extent of that yet. And while more people are back to work now, thank goodness, you know, the economy is recovering, we're still in a very depressed situation right now. As far as if you're just looking at unemployment numbers, we're still wildly underemployed, and most of that is our own doing. You know, we're not allowing those companies to open back up, and like you said, Don, when they do, a lot of them aren't going to, and they're already past the point of no return, and we'll have to see how that works out going forward. But there's going to be a lot of pain here for quite some time. It's not going to be quick.
Well, the unemployment rate, while it's up from its low, has not reached the low of the 2007-09 recession.
I mean, that's a startling number. It really is. That's where we, even with the recovery we've had, we're still down near the lows of the great financial crisis of, you know, 07 and 08. And that's where we are right now. So we're in a tough spot, and it's not, we can't just flick a switch. It's going to take some time to get this thing back on track.
Until this last year, that 07 unemployment number was the worst since the end of the World War II. But we turn around. The other issue is there's an awful lot of people who have left the labor force because they we're paying them to stay home. I mean,
that's one thing.
Who are still working. Yeah. So if we look at the adjusted unemployment rate, the number as of July was almost 13%, July of last year. And then right now it's still 9, but the unofficial rate is 6. So the numbers are better, but our real condition is not substantially improved. And so there is a debate about has the government made a good decision in terms of, well, shutting business down, giving us all sorts of what appeared to be at the time, and actually research has verified, were fairly arbitrary decisions that did not have scientific basis in them. It's just, you know, this looks really bad. This sounds reasonable. Let's just shut this down. It's just temporary. Well, it's temporary this month, and it's going to be temporary this month again. This month really is the final temporary month. I mean, we've heard this now. We are for a year, right?
A year. You bet.
And what we've done to try and keep the damage mitigated, unlike any previous recession, is we just borrow more money and hand it out. Yeah. Some people didn't need it. Some people who did need it didn't get it. I mean, how it was handled is basically a mystery. We don't know. Some businesses got money and they didn't need it. Other businesses that needed the money didn't get it. But I'm sure that it went to areas where their politicians were pretty sure they're going to get votes in exchange.
funny how that works out. Funny how that becomes a deciding factor. Is like, where can we get the biggest bang for our buck as far as voter response? And of course, that's part of the political system that we're in right now. And that's a huge factor. And it's going to be again for quite some time. That's not going to change anytime soon. The ability to dictate where money goes and where we're going to take it from is a huge equation in politics, and one that's constantly at the forefront.
And one of the questions that we have come in regularly is, how on earth are we ever going to pay this debt back?
Sure.
And we'll talk about that when we get back from a break.
Time for us to get out here at the bottom of the hour. If you have questions for us this morning, feel free to give us a call, 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. If you're not signed up for our Week in Review, which is our weekly email newsletter, you can register for that by sending us an email to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line. We need your first and last name, and we'll get you on the list, and you'll begin receiving that on Monday. That is just a look at what's going on out there in financial news for the week and what's important and what you can probably safely ignore. It's very well received. And if you decide you don't want it, you just hit the unsubscribe button and it is not going to show up again. We promise. Again, if you have a question for us this morning, give us a call, 888-312-5757. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometimes.
Yeah, stock market's a lot like living in the Northwest, at least in Western Washington, because there's rain and then there's sunshine, there's cloudy days. And it's interesting that while the stock market has a history of going up, the number of new highs, and I forget this time period, but it's over many decades, the number of new highs in the Dow is like 5% of the time.
Sure.
Most of the time, you're simply treading water, trying to catch up from having lost money. And we just don't think that makes a lot of sense, as you spend most of your time backfilling. But that is standard best practices for portfolio construction in the industry. But that's a rabbit trail here, and what we left going to break was the subject of government debt and the question of how are we going to pay it back, and the answer is we ain't. Government debt never truly gets paid back. We borrow more money, we pay off the old loans, we get a new one. This is not a mortgage. The way you pay it back is through growth and inflation. If you have inflation, you have more in the system, but it's not worth as much as the old stuff. So you're paying it back with cheaper dollars. And you need economic growth to do that. Higher taxes and more regulations dampens growth. I mean, so the current administration's policies trying to generate the expansion of the economy with their current policies, shutting down the oil pipeline, making us dependent on the OPEC again. I mean, these things are just counterproductive, which adds risk to the market that at least the last 4 years, it didn't think were problems, but they now are. And the inflation doesn't exist in a vacuum. So the Fed is saying, we're going to let it run a little hot. Well, if you were listening to the opening segment here, you know, there are signs that it's already getting pretty hot.
Getting warmer every day, you bet.
The Fed's getting pushed into a corner, and the bond market's either going to control this or the Fed is going to have to cave and intervene with more bond buying, a quantitative twist. That's not like the twist of the 60s. I mean, this one's much more damaging to the economy. But the Fed's putting itself in a box. And if it's just going to let interest rates rise for the next 2 years, assuming that inflation will self-correct, and there's an argument for that. I don't think we have time for it today. But if they're correct, they hold interest rates flat, short-term rates, which they can control, and long-term rates continue to rise. The higher that goes without economic growth, the more risk there is in your stock portfolio, while your bond portfolio, which is supposed to be the haven of safety, is getting damaged at the same time. This is not an environment where you should be a slacker sitting back in your easy chair and saying, "Yeah, it'll all work out in the end. I don't need the money right now anyway, unless something really bad happens." We have a call from Joanne in Seattle. Welcome, Joanne.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I hear our governor is going to make it mandatory for those that are working to have lifetime health care by, if you don't have it, your own policy by the 31st of July, then you get what the governor wants to give us. And I hear it's not transferable from one state to another, and I'm 78. Is there an age limit on how, you know, what they can do?
Governments can do what they want to do. And frankly, I don't know the answer to that. It's brand new. I don't know if you've seen anything on it yet, Perry. Yeah, I've heard the promotions on the radio for buy your long-term care now for me, because if you don't, government's going to tax you. And so, you know, I don't know what.
It'll be a payroll tax, I understand. I just wondered, is there an age limit where they're not going to collect it from us, take it out of our Social Security, or what? Do we have it? We wouldn't have a choice after the 31st of July.
Sorry, we got us there on new regulation that we have not looked at, Joanne. If it's simply limited to a payroll tax and you don't have a payroll and your Social Security doesn't count as payroll, then that should, by definition, exempt you. You've got to still be working to have a payroll tax.
True.
So that's a good question, and we're going to have to simply look for some more information on it in order to be able to give some clarity on it. We can try to do that for this next week.
Sure.
Thanks for your call, Joanne. Sorry we weren't able to give you any more information than that. That does open up a phone line, 888-312-5757. Talking about government debt here and this inflation that's going on, the real problem here is that government does not usually have a history of good decisions when it comes to the economy and managing money in general. I mean, there are some things that I think we all agree on that we need to be able to defend our country in the event of attack. And there are some other things we agree on, but that's not the purpose of our show here.
Right.
But as we take a look at what's actually happened with the shutdown, there are things that we've learned this last year. And now that we're a year into it, there are a lot of different agencies that have collected a lot of information about which ones worked, which ones didn't. Mises Institute is a free market institute and does a lot of academic study. And basically what we have learned, whether it's country or states, the ones that did shutdowns and the ones that didn't, the ones that did mask and the ones that didn't, statistically, there's virtually no difference in infection, hospitalization, and death rates from COVID-19. So you see states opening up, and you know, we know a few states that are saying, "No, I'm not going to do that." A lot of them right here on the West Coast. But you turn around and look at states that there was supposed to be an explosion of deaths because of governors who said, I don't think this is good for my people.
Right.
And they removed the mask mandate. They let businesses open up. And they basically said, you know, people are smart. They'll take care of themselves. They understand that this is a risky situation. And so they will exercise their own level of caution. And that's the way it's going to be.
And it's almost always the same way that it turns out that politicians do not have the kind of sway over everyone's life that they think they do. And there's no way that they can just dictate what's going to happen, especially in something as crazy as a virus out there. They never have the outcomes that they're looking for. It just becomes what does this look like? It's all about optics and very little is about anything that's factual.
So we've got Jerry from Seattle about Biden's tax plan. Jerry, you're on the air with Don and Perry. Welcome, sir.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I was wondering if you could comment on the elements of the Biden tax plan, in particular, the change in capital gain taxes being proposed, and also at what income levels major tax increases would kick in. And I'm happy to step and take your answer off the air. Just listen on my radio. I'm on a cell phone on iPad.
Thank you, Jerry.
That's fine. I appreciate that.
You bet.
So right now, even the people on financial media on TV are saying, well, it's not casting concrete. And yeah, we know we said that, but it really is going to mean something else. So right now, it's nothing but speculation, except that the bill they just passed, the emergency bill to deal with COVID expenses, most of which didn't go to household income, but other projects, has tax increases in it. Nobody's talked about those. There's more coming. That's all I can say. And capital gains is one area that they think only the rich have capital gains. Mm. And so we're only taxing the rich, because if you're not rich, you wouldn't have money in an investment, which is not true, but that doesn't matter. And we'll end up changing the brackets by the time it gets through. The only possible salvation here is that I think the Republicans in the Senate are pretty unified when it comes to tax increases. So they may not happen. But it will be a fight.
It'll be a fight. And they probably are. And they're probably going to be more widely dispersed than they first say. They always, you know, start with, well, we're only taxing the very wealthiest, you know, we're going after the 1%ers, blah, blah, blah. And the fact of the matter is, unless you get down into the middle class, you don't get the bulk of the tax revenues that you need. So that's where it ends up. So more people end up getting taxed than they ever talk about when they begin the plan. And that's how they want to couch it. Again, like I said before, it's based on optics, not on any reality. And when you get down to the numbers, that's when things are going to shake out differently than anything they're saying right now. But the capital gains increase, of course, that cuts across all everybody's and if you have capital gains, it doesn't matter what your income. They're not going to exempt you from a capital gains increase. Everyone's going to get that.
So originally it was somebody who earns over $400,000. Well, that's been changed to, it's now household income over. So at double income, totaling 400, that's going to hit it. But what you just said, Perry, is that is not low enough to generate any real revenue.
No.
It has to drop down into the, I'd say, 250, maybe 200 before they're actually going to start picking up revenue. There's not enough tax revenue at the 1%er level. I mean, you could go into Jeff Bezos and all the big tech owners and confiscate their entire net worth, and you couldn't liquidate it because you drive prices down, but you could confiscate it theoretically, and you're still going to pay for government operations for a few days.
Yep.
I mean,
drop in the bucket. Yeah.
That whole deal doesn't work. It's backwards. But what we need is economic expansion, and that means businesses need to open up, and that means we need employment, because if you get employment, you can generate out of productivity revenue. the revenue hits the household pays taxes. Government gets that. Can't do that with shutdowns, lockdowns. And the Fed can't fix this problem.
and that is a problem. The other thing we can't fix, Don, is a clock. So we're past our break. When we come back, we will talk about what the Fed can and cannot fix, and what they have, what they're trying to do, and what they're capable of doing are sometimes two very different things. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update coming up on Saturday, April 3rd. It'll be 9:15 right after the show. If you'd like to register for that, go to IRIRadio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. Go to the webinar page and just give that registration link a click, and you'll be good to go. And then on Saturday, April 3rd, just click that link. You'll be live online with us. You'll be able to see the charts that we're talking about often here on the show, see what we're thinking about the market in general, and you'll have plenty of time for any questions you have on investing, individual securities you own, or something you're thinking about adding to your portfolio. Good time to get a second opinion on that. You can register again at IRIRadio.com. We have one segment remaining here. Plenty of time to get your call on the board. If you have a question for us, give us a call at 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Make it higher, make it higher. I've used that before. That's what we all want to happen with the stock market. However, what's going up, what's going higher, higher, higher are interest rates. The Fed is apparently committed to not intervening this time around. We go back to 1978. The Fed at that time was given a dual mandate. Congress finally figured out that they could not do anything about creating full employment, but government should be able to fix this. Let's get it off our desk. We'll give it to the Fed. This reminds me of the old cereal commercials. We'll give it to Mikey. He'll eat anything.
Give it. So, just not to mention, it's not going to be our job anymore. So this is just, we got a winner here.
If it doesn't work, it's not going to be on our desk.
There we go.
So anyway, the Full Employment and Balanced Growth Act of 1978. That sounds really good. So they were supposed to actually get unemployment down to 3% and inflation 3 or less. Well, they have never done that. During the Trump administration, we got down really close to the 3%. That's the best it's ever been. And since the great financial crisis, the Fed has been trying to raise inflation to the 2% level. And so far, that hasn't worked. Let's forget about the 3% target. Let's just change it to 2%. Maybe we can get that done and look like we succeeded at our task. The unemployment issue, well, we weren't getting that done either, so we changed what our real target was, which is to get full employment, the definition of which remains a little elusive.
There's no number on that one, so the percentage is gone. Now it's just full employment. That's easier to couch.
Yeah, so that was done by Janet Yellen when she was at the Fed. She's now at the Treasury, so we know what her policy orientation is. And Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, he's under pressure, which he has basically caved to. And it's no longer full employment. It is full employment by demographic sector so that we can achieve equity. So we have watched over this last year our equal rights under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights has basically been redefined, and the Powell's doing the same thing. Well, we want full employment, but we want full employment. We're going to concentrate on this segment of potential labor and see if we can't get them in a better position. Forget about Emma. Forget about you. You already got a job. You know, you're in the wrong place because of your birth, your skin color, your education, whatever criteria we've created. Emma, this is really a political animal. Instead of saying, let's get this economy going, we're going to see if we can fine-tune parts of the economy, make them work, and maybe that'll spill over. Oh, trickle-down doesn't work, does it? By golly, we missed it again. We are not encouraged about current policy implementation that is going on right now. And it has a major impact on you, believe it or not, because most people building their portfolio for retirement or for major expenses downstream are building it based on long-term rates of return, specifically equities. Even, but there's an assumption in there about bond rates, which over the last 40 years have been about, they average about 5.5%, because interest rates have been falling for that period of time. Well, that's not happening now. The interest rates are actually rising. In fact, year to date, bond investors have basically been losing their money month after month after month. Now we're only a couple of months into the year. So, I mean, what's the big deal? Interest rates are bound to fall, aren't they? Well, sooner or later, they will come down. But what's going to bring them down? Government intervention or another economic downturn?
Sure. And the important part is that trend has changed. That bond return that is baked into that pie chart is just not there, and it's not going to be, because we can't have falling rates for the next 40 years. We're too close to zero at where we are. So it's just important to remember that is part of the portfolio, that pie chart portfolio, that the bond return at the 5% range is baked in, that you need that for the portfolio to work, and it's not there. And it's not there temporarily. It's not there for the long term right now because rates are so low.
Investors have been brainwashed into believing that returns from stocks and or bonds, with statements like, the market has historically returned 7% a year, or sure, the market returns 8 to 10% a year. Investing in stocks will get you at least 5% real return over the long run, or some sort of line to that effect. The problem is it's always over the long run. And as I referenced in the first segment with the guy who was hustling gold, trying to get us to put it in our portfolios because over 40 years it would work out okay for our clients. Or as Perry reminded me, it was Kudlow who said, put your money in the market when just because it's down in 40, 50 years. So most of our clients are really in or very close to retiring. And when we turn around and look at our clients who are in their 70s and their 80s, and we still have some in their 90s, you know, that 40, 50 year scenario, It's not a hard sell.
Not really meaningful when you tell them, hey, you know, in 40 years, you're going to be looking great. And you get that deer in the headlights look and say, I'm not sure I'm going to be around here in 40 years. You know, what are we going to do about right now? I have bills to pay now. And that's what you need to think about.
Well, and over 40 years, you know, you're going to have bear markets. You know, theoretically, you'll never have one in your lifetime, because theoretically, bear markets only happen once every 500 years.
Right, right.
That's the same theory that builds your pie chart, modern portfolio theory. That's the probability of a bear market, once in 500 years. We've had 17 of them since the 1929 crash. So there's a disconnect between theory and your life. So we happen to be concerned about don't lose money. And this is Warren Buffett's rule one, don't lose money. Warren Buffett's rule two is remember rule one. So far this year, you know, these markets have been volatile, but so far this year, all of our models are outperforming the benchmark, the S&P 500. I mean, we keep track of that every day. We don't want to lose money. It doesn't mean we never will, because nobody gets every trade right. But we are concerned about, how do we defend ourselves when things begin to fall apart? And you go back and watch our January webinar, which you can see if you go to irradio.com, you'll see how we actually did that in a month-by-month analysis of how we dealt with the falling market last year, which is the same process we used back in 18.
Sure.
when Janet Yellen raised interest rates. I mean, it was... Nah, she wasn't the one. Was she there at the Fed? I don't remember if she was there. Interest rates rose. Market tanked 20% in the fourth quarter of 18, and we sidestepped that. Same way we did last year. Find out more. Go to irradio.com. Look at the video tab. Sign up for next the April 3rd webinar that we're going to do. We'll bring you up to date on what we see going on. you want to talk to us during the week, we have a number, a phone number that works, 800-317-9119. And we are out of time. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. See you next week.